हेलो दोस्तों, मेरा नाम है जयेश गंगन और आप देख रहे हैं द आवारा मुसाफिर शो। इन टुडेज एपिसोड आई गॉट एन अपॉर्चुनिटी टू टॉक विद लेफ्टिनेंट जनरल कमल दावा सर। ही इज अ वेटरन ऑफ 1965 एंड 1971 ऑपरेशंस। ही इज वन ऑफ इंडियाज लीडिंग मिलिट्री एक्सपर्ट्स। इन हिज कैरियर विच स्पैन्स ओवर 41 ईयर्स, ही हैज डन अ लॉट ऑफ थिंग्स। ही वॉज ऑल्सो द फर्स्ट डायरेक्टर जनरल ऑफ इंडियाज डिफेंस इंटेलिजेंस एजेंसी। इस एपिसोड में लेफ्टिनेंट जनरल कमल दावर पाकिस्तान के डीप स्टेट के बारे में बात करते हैं। वो समझाते हैं कि डीप स्टेट क्या है और पाकिस्तान में डीप स्टेट का फॉर्म कैसे हुआ, उसका ओरिजिन स्टोरी क्या है। हम इस बारे में भी बात करते हैं कि इमरान खान की गवर्नमेंट को आउस्ट क्यों किया गया था, क्या इसके पीछे भी एक डीप स्टेट का हाथ था, और हम खालिस्तानी मूवमेंट के बारे में भी बात करते हैं। ये पूरा जो एपिसोड है ये बेस्ड है लेफ्टिनेंट जनरल कमल दावर की इस किताब ट्रिस्ट विद परफिडी पे, जो कि बात करती है अबाउट द डीप स्टेट ऑफ पाकिस्तान। इस किताब को काफी सारे मशहूर लोग जैसे कि डॉक्टर शशि थरूर, जनरल एनसी विज एंड फॉर्मर हाई कमिश्नर ऑफ इंडिया टू पाकिस्तान जी पार्थासारथी सर, इन सभी ने एंडोर्स किया है। दिस एपिसोड इज ऑल अबाउट पाकिस्तान। इस एपिसोड को सुनने के बाद आपको पाकिस्तान के बारे में सब कुछ पता चल जाएगा। ऑल्दो देयर वाज सम इंटरनेट इश्यूज इन दिस एपिसोड जिसके से हम एक डीप पॉडकास्ट रिकॉर्ड नहीं कर पाए, बट आई प्रॉमिस यू मैं बहुत जल्द लेफ्टिनेंट जनरल कमल दावर सर के साथ में एक इन पर्सन पॉडकास्ट रिकॉर्ड करूंगा एंड आई विल ब्रिंग इट टू यू। बट टिल देन वॉच दिस एपिसोड टिल द एंड एंड या कमेंट्स में जय हिंद लिख के जरूर जाना। सो हेलो, वेलकम ऑन द आवारा मुसाफिर शो सर। इट्स अ ह्यूज ऑनर टू हैव यू हियर एंड टू बी एबल टू टॉक विथ यू, एंड ऑल्सो वी विल बी टॉकिंग अबाउट योर बुक ट्रिस्ट विद परफिडी। फर्स्टली द नेम इटसेल्फ इज रियली अमेजिंग एंड द स्नेक ऑन इट जस्ट इट्स लाइक अ चेरी ऑन द टॉप। सो फर्स्टली व्हाई ट्रिस्ट विद परफिडी, एस्पेशली व्हेन परफिडी इज सच अ स्ट्रॉन्ग वर्ड फॉर अ नेबर, सो कैन यू एक्सप्लेन दैट?
Okay, I think that's a very pertinent question, and I've been asked this by many people. You see, as you know, trist means meeting or an approach, yeah. Meeting really. And perfidy means, you know, deceit, something which is not loyal, somebody's not loyal and all that. So I wish I could have said or used Pandit Nehru's words of trist with destiny, you know, that famous eloquent speech he gave at the stroke of the midnight hour,
right,
when he says, when the world sleeps, India wakes. With tryst with destiny. Now, why I've called it tryst with perfidy, coming to your question, is that unfortunately, the Pakistanis who were born out of the same womb, that is the womb of Mother India, right from independence onwards, they have been indulging in deceit with us. And not only, let me tell you, not only with us, but even with their own people. And that is why I have tried to chronicle, you know, the birth and the subsequent entrenching of extra constitutional interests in Pakistan's various organs of their government, which is the deep state. And if you want, I'll explain what deep state is as I understand it and as it is commonly understood.
Right. So, I would really love to know what is a deep state from you, because I have been studying about Pakistan through some of their local authors, through some of people who have written books on Pakistan from India. And I have always tried to answer this one question, like, what is Pakistan? Is it a democracy? Is it a theocratic nation? Or is it a military dictatorship? And then I read your book, which states that it is a deep state. So can you explain to our viewers and to everyone, what is a deep state?
Right. Again, a very pertinent question. You see, the word deep state is about 60, 70 years old. And what the deep state actually implies is that, you know, it hails from a Latin word, imperio, imperium, which means a state within a state. Right. Now, even in America, President Eisenhower, and before him, is Harry Truman, they used to talk about the military-industrial complex, the CIA, also being something like a deep state. Yeah. Now, what is a deep state? A deep state are people, organizations, which are not constitutionally mandated, neither by the law or by any procedure or any tradition or things like that, but they are wielding the levers of power within their own setups, within their own countries, far beyond what a constitutionally mandated institution does. For example, as I gave you the example of America, the military-industrial complex, well, they drive a lot of the American policies. and some of the, for example, let me bring you fast forward to now, the Russian-Ukrainian war. Who's what is happening now there? You know, weapons are being sold in their billions of dollars worth. And who's sort of gaining anything out of it? The military-industrial complex. That is the deep state. Now in Pakistan, we have they were supposed to be a democracy. There's some sort of a sham democracy, poor fellows that they are. And what happens is that the deep state there is the powerful Pakistan army, its intelligence agencies, primarily the inter-services intelligence, and the many terror tanzims they control. But this unholy trinity wields a lot of power, and all governments, whether it was the recently ousted Imran Khan's government or the previous governments earlier. The previous governments earlier, I'm saying also, you know, right since their inception, the deep state is wielding a large, amount of power, and they don't let democracy function. They don't let the institution functions because they have all the levers of power in their own right. So the deep state in Pakistan is this unholy trinity, which I just explained to you.
Right. So, sir, when we look at Pakistan, since its inception, I don't think so there has been any government that has served its full term. Always there has been either military coups or the government has been ousted by some method. So how does this deep state form in Pakistan? What is its, you know, origin story?
No, it formed in Pakistan because whenever democracy is in peril or it's weak, then the Pakistan army, and we are talking now particularly about Pakistan, then the Pakistani army stepped in. For example, Field Marshal Ayub Khan stepped in throughout the government. And, and what they do is they initially try to say, look, since there is breakdown of law and order, there is very bad governance. So we are coming in to help. And after a few months, we'll go back. Even Ziaul Haq, if you recall, when he took over, he said, look, it's a question of maximum few months, maximum 6 months, and I will hand it over back to power. I'll hand the power back to the democratically elected, or we'll have elections. Right. But then once you taste power, then you just don't leave it. And today, Pakistani armed forces, the senior generals and all, they are, rolling in money, whereas the man on the street is struggling. The Pakistani economy is in a very bad way, as we all know. Yeah, but the Pakistani generals are not going to leave it. So now, but what they've done here lately, although over the last some years, is that they have said, look, we have to live internationally. We have to get international loans. We have to have some diplomatic relations with many powerful countries and all. So what we do is we will prop up proxies or weaklings, like even a charismatic popular leader like Imran Khan was really a puppet in the hands of the Pakistani army. And what happened? That they ousted him. And let's see how long Shehbaz Sharif and his government lasts. So they do take in the important aspects of governance and policy, they have to take the dictates of the Pakistan army.
So, sir, let me ask you this one very important question, which is, why was Imran Khan ousted? Was there any particular reason for the deep state of Pakistan to get him out? Or what is the main reason behind it?
Okay. Now, I think we have digressed from the discussion on my book to why Imran Khan was ousted. Well, that's your prerogative as the anchor. Imran Khan alleges that he was ousted because he was seen getting a little close to Russia. You know, it's one day prior to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, he visited there. And he says that he was not following the dictates of the United States administration, especially the Pentagon. And let me also at this time tell you that the Americans, have a on-off relationship with the Pakistanis, but one relationship which has been abiding, and we don't talk much about it, is the U.S. Pentagon's warm relationship with the Pakistani army.
Right.
And whatever the Pakistani... And the Pakistani army knows that their sustenance, economic sustenance, and in the earlier years, the military sustenance was derived from the largest of the United States, primarily the Pentagon. So according to Imran Khan, since he was not towing the American line, he was through the via the Pakistani army, he was actually eased out. And as you know, this is going to be a major plank when the next elections are going to be held.
Got it. Because this question was important, because I think so a lot of audience would also like to know this. So when we talk about Pakistan and the India relations with them, who is India at war with? Is it the Pakistani people? Is it the Pakistani government? Or is it the Pakistani army? Because these are like the three very different things. And I think so recently we have also seen that Pakistani people, they have come out and talked about what its army is doing. So who are we exactly at war with?
I think that's a very important question you've asked. And in your question lies the answer. You see, we are at war, in a matter of speaking, with the Pakistani army. Though General Bajwa, let me just also mention to you, in the last 2-3 months, he's been making some very statesman-like, statements.
Right.
And so we are predominantly, because the Pakistani army does not wish, because the perks and the privilege and the, what they enjoy, they are not going to let it go. Simple as that. For example, if there's, there are 3-star generals, 2-star generals and all, they are controlling. And there's a book, beautiful book on the Pakistani military establishment's financial dealings by a well-known Pakistani, respected Pakistani lady known as Aisha Siddiqui. And she's written this book, Military.Incorporated. Now that clearly shows that the Pakistani army is holding over a 20 billion empire. They got into contracts, into production, they got industries and things like that. And they're, and all their people in their ordnance factories and things like that are all predominantly Pakistani army personnel. And the CEOs and the MDs and all are all retired Pakistani army officers. So they're having a ball, So they've got all the money, the perks and the privileges, and they're not going to let it go. Now, but they also realize that overall the Pakistani nation is absolutely now down on its knees as far as its economic situation is concerned. And a time will come in a month or two or three, they may not have money to pay their armed forces or their government, officers and, the personnel who are manning the government. So they also would now like to play up to Saudi Arabia. They like to play up to America, of course, and to China. But the Chinese also, let me tell you, are very smart. They're making slowly Pakistan a colony of theirs. And even Imran Khan was wagging his tail as far as China was concerned. So this was another factor why he was also ousted. Because of the last few months, you would have noticed, some of the geopolitical changes which are taking place, not only Russia, Ukraine, but the Americans also are now getting very chary of China's resurgence, economically.
The complete
militarily.
World order is changing.
Absolutely. You're very right. And that is why they knew that Imran Khan is warming up. Of course, China-Pakistan relations have been on the ascendant since many, many years. Having said that, Imran Khan was actually warming up much too much with China and to an extent with Russia. So according to Imran Khan himself, that it was a conspiracy hatched by the Americans to ease him out.
Right.
You see, in this book, I have tried to study the complexities of Pakistan's continuing quest for an identity and its eternal, albeit myopic, self-destructive anti-India policies. Now, right from 1947, to answer your question, what has Pakistan been doing? India looms very large in all its political strategic formulations. And for no rhyme or reason, and as a matter of fact, if they had a little more sense, we also understand that there are billions of people suffering in this part of the world. You know, the right. fruits of freedom and independence has not reached them. You know, just see the, the price rise in Pakistan is astronomical. 300 rupees for a kilowatt hour and, 200 to 400 rupees for a kilo of tomatoes and all that. I mean, who can afford all this? But the Pakistanis are obsessed and they know about it. You know, they have a civil society, which is sane, which are good people. But unfortunately, they are in the clutches of this deep state. And that is why I've written this book, that the deep state, which professes that they are working for Pakistan's progress and stability, are actually the chief architects of Pakistan's misery. And they are also now driving their own country for their own selfish ends onto becoming a Chinese colony. You know, and this so-called border road, the border road initiative of the Chinese is CPEC, the China-Pakistan Economic Highways, is economic corridor is nothing but an extension of China's imperialistic policies. And if you remember, about 10, 15 years back or 20 years back, everybody was talking in the world that this is going to be an ancient, that the 21st century will be an Asian century. Of course, they included China, Japan, India, and also Pakistan and other Southeastern Asian states. But now I'm afraid, thanks to China and thanks to their, Pakistan, it's becoming a century of conflict and not the Asian century.
So, sir, as you rightly mentioned that within a few, like maybe years or months, Pakistan won't be able to pay their army personnel as well. And as we have seen, the US has denied Pakistan loans. China, in a way, is denying them loans. Russia is at the same place. Saudi Arabia is doing the same thing. And they have Pakistan has the pressure from IMF as well. So when we look at Pakistan now and when we see the kind of issues they are trying to create in India, one of the biggest issue is the Kashmir issue, and they try to make this as international as possible every time. So why is Kashmir issue so important to them?
You see, because if you recall, immediately after independence, 2 months after our independence, in the month of October 47, they unleashed these razakars and all. Of course, they got a bloody nose and they were sent back packing. And some areas they have got, which is, the Gilgit-Baltistan area and the Pakistan-occupied Jammu and Kashmir area. Now, they've called it this joke, that it's their jugular vein. Actually, it really is not very strategically important for them. But for them, because JNK was a Muslim, predominantly Muslim state. So they, and what is the raison d'etre of Pakistan? It was created as a Muslim state because they felt that India, which was a secular country, with multicultural country, multi-religious country and things like that. But Pakistan was born out of being to be an Islamic state. So it is just an extension that why has India got Jammu and Kashmir? They forget about one thing, that India is a secular country. We've got the third largest, Muslim population in the entire world. And more importantly, all hues of the Islamic faith flourish in India. Whether you're a Sunni, whether you're a Shia, whether you're a Bora, whether you're a Ahmadiyya, unlike in Pakistan, where only the Sunnis are predominant and they even don't consider the Shias as part of Islam. So unfortunately, this over-obsession with religion is also an extension of their, their over-obsession with India or this myopic self-destructive policy they face vis-a-vis India.
Towards India. Yes, but you mentioned that Pakistan was born out of the religion for the as an Islamic state. But when we see the modern Pakistan, isn't it the Pakistan which is living just to hate India?
Yeah, exactly. Because they feel that just, whenever they have elections or whenever they have to raise the temperature, they will just start talking about India or you know, cross some red line and all, start, you know, increasing terrorism and things like that. It is right. just to exist, because tomorrow, if we have peace with Pakistan, you know, and the people of Pakistan want peace with us. There are a large number of young students which you interact with abroad, or when they come to India or wherever they meet Indians. They are not anti-India. They don't hate India so much. But the Pakistani deep state, again, I'm trying to reinforce what I've tried to write in this book. The Pakistan army, the intelligence agencies, and the many terror tandeems, they will start stoking up religion. That we are now being fair to our Kashmiris. Yeah, you please forget about our part of Kashmir and look after yourselves, because otherwise you will they are in the throes of disintegration. Sindh is up in arms, Baluchistan in any case is up in arms, and the struggle for independence by the Baluchis and the Sindhis is getting greater by the day. Yeah. Instead of tackling their own problems, they, you know, this is like diversionary tactics, that they try and create some problems in Jammu and Kashmir, which is an inalienable part of India and will always remain that. So
right. So one other thing, which is that in the book as well, you have mentioned about Punjab. You have mentioned about Captain Amrinder Singh's book as well, lest we forget. And recently we have seen that this Khalistani movement, it has resurfaced. And Captain Amrinder Singh, a few months back, he shared some details about what's happening on the border, international border, and the smuggling which is going on. So what do you think is ISI doing right now with resurfacing this issue?
Yeah. That's very pertinent in today's context, in today's immediate context. You see, when General Zia-ul-Haq took over the government, the reins of the government, and he threw out Nawaz Sharif. Right. Now, what he did was he started off this K2, Operation K2. Which is Kashmir and Khalistan. And he started supplying arms and money and drugs and what have you through their ISI to whip up these movements in Kashmir and increase terrorism in Kashmir and secessionism, encouraging secessionism in Kashmir, as also in Punjab. Now, the Khalistani movement with Jarnail Singh, Bhindranwale, and some other disgruntled guys who were in the payroll of the Pakistanis, they started whipping up the anti-Hindu, anti-India sentiments in Punjab. But fortunately, the roots of Punjab are, they're the same roots as the roots of North India. And, and there is no difference between Sikhism and Hinduism and things like that. And the Sikhs on their own, and let me tell you, the Sikhs are the bravest of the brave. I've had the privilege and pleasure of commanding Sikh troops. They're the greatest of the troops. They let the Pakistanis have it, and they will let them have it every time the Pakistanis try to create problems. But always remember that in a country like India, you have to keep everybody together. We are multicultural, we are multi-religious, we are multi-ethnic, we are multi-caste, we are multilingual and things like that. So you also have to be careful. Nothing is automatic, okay? And today, let me also sound some warning that some Sikhs, disgruntled Sikhs, are on the payroll of the ISI, especially in Canada, UK, Germany, a bit in the US and things like that. And they are trying to whip up this the Khalistani movement, and the Pakistanis are going all out of it. And maybe the Chinese also have a hand in it. We never know. We never can tell. So we have to be very careful in handling our minorities, as a matter of fact, all our communities within this country. But be rest assured that our minority communities all over India, right from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, they are very loyal, very patriotic, very strong, and they'll give a absolutely, bloody nose to anybody who tries to interfere in our internal affairs.
Right, right. So, so I know we are running out of time. So I'll ask you last few questions, which is, and one of those is like, and this comes from an audience, which was looking at the India-Pakistan relationships right now and the kind of trouble the Pakistan's deep state creates for India time and again. Is it important for India that Pakistan breaks into, I don't know, like several states?
That is, you see, there are two ways of looking at it. One is that if it disintegrates into two states or three states, there's India has to be careful about the spillover. You see, that the Pakistani army will also unleash. I mean, they're already very violent against the Baluchis and to an extent against the Sindhis. So a lot of violence will be unleashed and some of the spillover will come to India also. India is luck would have it. We've never, worked to exploit Pakistanis' fault lines. Whereas the Pakistanis have been crossing many red lines, which are Indian red lines. But they have crossed many times our red lines. But, you know, we've been, as a larger nation, or if I can call ourselves the elder sibling, which most of them would not like to hear. But the fact is that we have not tried to exploit too many of their fault lines. But keep creating trouble, then like we had the surgical strike, as you know, we paid them in the same coin. So we still have to pay them in the same coin in case they create problems. And this is where the Pakistanis should be wary of, that we are 6 to 7 times larger than them. We are more powerful. They can be a nuclear state, doesn't matter. But we are much, much bigger and larger and more powerful. And the Pakistanis, for their own good, the Pakistani army for its own good, and must control their terror tanzeems and not indulge in anything. Otherwise, it will bounce back on Pakistan. Pakistan, as you know, is the epicenter of global terror. Now, they are also suffering themselves. Having fostered terrorism, they are also suffering themselves. And I've quoted Hillary Clinton's, that great remark she made a dozen times in my articles and writings, that if you rear cobras in your backyard, one day they'll bite you.
Yes, sir. That's absolutely true. And in fact, when the Australia versus Pakistan cricket match was going on, there was a bomb blast in Pakistan, and that is very worrying for them. And so, last two questions. One is, how do you see the future of India-Pakistan relationship now? Because the deep state in Pakistan, it has, I think so, it's growing like cancer for them. And India on the side, we want to grow. We are not even looking at Pakistan right now. Our main concern is China. So how do you think this relationship is going to work?
Yeah, so your question is, India-Pakistan relations the way forward? Or is there a way forward? Okay. Now, I always believe, I'm being a soldier, I'm an optimist, but hopefully a realist also. We would like to improve our relations with Pakistan. And I think a lot of sane members of their Pakistani civil society who I've met also during track to diplomacy, they also yearn for friendship with India. They love coming to India and meeting us and things like that. And they also, and India is a great example of how a country, we got our independence together, where India has reached and where are the Pakistanis. I mean, there is no comparison. Poor fellows don't even have $30 billion in their foreign, foreign exchange, forex reserves. Yeah. Having said that, but at the moment, I don't see very much of, optimism as far as the improvement in India-Pakistan relations are concerned, notwithstanding the fact that the Pakistani Army Chief General Bajwa has said that we must get closer to India and keep away the flames of fire from this region. These are his words, flames of fire from this region. But the point is, the thing is, if the Pakistani Army is in absolute power there, they are the only ones who can create better relations with India. You see, all Indian ministers, if you please see the history of the last 30 years or 40 years, all Indian prime ministers have tried to improve relations with Pakistan. And whenever some relationship improvements are seen, all of a sudden you'll find the terror tanzims, you know, they create some problems and have a blast, this, that, and the other. So the Pakistanis have to learn first to get internally cohesive. And the Pakistani army, let it be. We are not teaching democracy to Pakistan or telling them what to do or what not to do.
Yeah.
But if you recall also, India-Pakistan relations improved during the time of when General Musharraf was in power.
And absolutely,
he categorically said that Dr. Manmohan Singh, then our Indian Prime Minister, he said that there'll be no redrawing of boundaries. And you know, which was acknowledged and virtually accepted by General Musharraf. After Musharraf, things again started off. Because you see, the trouble is the Pakistan army and their deep state, which is the terror tanzims and the ISI, they need existence. What is their existence? Anti-India, spewing venom against India, creating some stupid terrorist problems, and for which today they are also suffering. So they have to get out of this so-called, you know, chakraview of hating India and trying to make relations better with India.
Got it, sir.
So at the moment, I don't think we should be, once you are strong internally, externally, and you are economically strong, everybody around you in the immediate neighborhood, in the extended neighborhood, they will all fall in line as far as you are concerned. And let me tell you, I'm not saying it as an Indian or a soldier or things like that. Hopefully, being a realist, I'm telling you, India has the greatest, the brightest of future in the coming in the coming decades.
Right, sir. And I 100% agree with you on this, because as a youth, I can see where the country is going and where I want to take it personally. So, sir, thank you so much for doing this podcast. But to end this podcast on a lighter note, I have a question for you, which is, now that you have written two books, what are your opinions about, is the pen mightier than the sword?
The pen, you know, I was asked this question at the Bangalore Lit Fest.
Right.
And the anchor didn't like my reply. The pen is definitely mightier than the sword, but the sword counts when the pen is silent.
Wow, that's a good answer, sir. You have spoken like a true patriot for the country. And so to end this podcast, thank you so much for doing this and for serving the nation. We all thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you for your kind words. It was my pleasure and privilege, and above all, my duty, that I joined the armed forces and did whatever little I could for my country. And I shall continue to be doing so till my last breath. Thank you very much.
Wow, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for coming on the show and giving your message to the world. And also, I would request the audience to go out there, buy this beautiful book. It has great insights about Pakistan and the deep state. I really love this book. So, yeah, thank you so much, sir.